Let's restart. So, you know, the thing that's hidden here is the fact that, so, you know, if you know the Jacobi identity, it comes from Lie algebras, and there is a, what's hidden here is that there is a relationship between A and Lie algebras. And so far the relation is a bit informal because I've only talked about kind of a part of A, not even a part of A in a formal sense. It's a certain diagrams that look like parts that appear inside the diagram in A. Okay? So the main point of the second hour now will be to make this relationship formal and therefore move into low algebra. So low algebra is Lie algebras for this context. Okay? Before doing this, one further thing about combinatorics. So, as you remember, A up C and therefore A, and therefore A up T, right, the three things are from this point on identified, is a bialgebra. Okay? So the next thing to ask is what form does the bialgebra take in the language of A up T? Okay? So, it's completely clear how to multiply. So, right, if you have two diagrams and you want to, in A up T, and you want to multiply them, the product will just be the concatenation. Okay? And if you don't believe me, then all you need to know is that this is true for chord diagrams, and it respects, and it's well defined. Okay? So since chord diagrams span A up T, it's done. Okay? Likewise, I need to tell you what the coproduct is. So I need to tell you what box of a diagram is. The answer with the diagram that's now allowed to have trivalent vertices. And first I'll tell you the answer, and then I'll explain why it's true. Okay? So the answer is, you remove the skeleton from the diagram temporarily. So you remove the skeleton from the diagram, and now it becomes a union of connected components. And then you decide which you sum over all possibilities of taking one connected component to the left and one connected component to the right. And then you put the skeleton around them back again. Okay? So, in other words, in this case, you will get four possibilities. Let's draw four skeletons. One, two, or four biskeletons, I guess. Four pairs of skeletons. And the two connected components, each one will independently choose whether to go to the left or to the right. So if both go to the left, you get this. If one goes to the left and the other goes to the right, you get this. If it's the other way around, you get this. And if both go to the right, you get this. Okay? So that's box. Now, if I want to show you that box as defined as A up on A up T, that this is the right box, I just have to show you that it agrees with the previous definition on A up C, and that it respects the relations. Okay? So The fact that it agrees with the definition on ARC is trivial, right? Because if I have a diagram that only has chords, then the connected components of what you get when you remove the skeleton are precisely the chords. So this will just be the same as before, and there is nothing to prove. And then what I still need to show is that box respects STU. If it respects STU, since then it's well defined, and since A up C spans the result is equal to the total space, that forces box to be what I say it is. Okay? So I just need to check that it satisfies STU. So let's check that. So I need to check that box applied to an STU relation, so this minus that plus that, where the bottom line is a skeleton line, so it should be red. Okay? I need to show that this is equal to 0 modulo, right? This is a relation, so it needs to be 0 modulo the relation. So this has to be 0 in A tensor A, or A up T tensor A up T. Okay? But let's verify this. We've essentially verified it three times already, or twice already in different ways. But let's do it again. So I guess the point is that if you look at these two terms, right? Oh, you know what? It's slightly more complicated. So this is a small part of a bigger picture. Okay? If the two ends here, A and B, get connected somehow through, are part of the same connected component via the rest of the diagram, then either this diagram goes completely to the left or completely to the right. This diagram either goes completely to the left or completely to the right. This diagram either goes completely to the left or completely to the right. But in any case, on the left you'll have this minus this plus that, tensor nothing. And on the right, in the right case, you'll have nothing, tensor, this minus this plus that. So you'll have an STU relation either on the left or on the right, and in either case you get 0. That's one possibility. The more interesting possibility is the case where the A and B belong to different connected components, so do not get connected in the complement. Okay? If they do not get connected to the complement, then when you apply box to this diagram, there are two further possibilities. And the two further possibilities is that the piece of A will go to the left and the piece of B will go to the right, or the other way around. Okay, so these two could be separated by box. But if they are separated by box, then there is no distinction between this picture and that picture. The only difference between this picture and that picture is the placement of the ends along the skeleton. But if the two pieces go to different skeleta, there is no distinction anymore. So the pieces in which these two are split to the different sides cancel between here and here. So we're back again to the case where the whole picture either goes to the left or goes to the right, and therefore it's well defined. Okay? So I've just shown that this goes to zero, and therefore blah blah blah. Therefore this is the correct coproduct. Anyway, there is a corollary. And the corollary is D's with just one connected component are primitive. So just to be clear, what do I mean by that? So my definition of the diagrams was that they were to be connected. Okay? So in some sense, they all have just one connected component. So to make this statement non-empty, you have to understand what I mean by one connected component. What I mean by a connected component is a connected component once you remove the skeleton. Okay? So in other words, diagrams that have only one connected component, like this one, if you remove the skeleton, so this one has a single connected component, even if you remove the skeleton. So such diagrams are primitive. Because diagrams like this clearly go to, you know, they have to go in one chunk, either to the left or to the right. And that just means that D goes to D tensor 1 plus 1 tensor D. So these are primitive. You can show that this is an if and only if. So, or as, sorry, that's not quite true. I mean, you can show that these diagrams span the primitives. So if you look at the primitive subspace as defined last time, it is the linear span of diagrams with a single connected component. And you can say a bit more, and but it's not the right time to do that. I want to go elsewhere. But in particular, you know, last time with some effort, I've shown that this diagram is primitive, but now you know why it is primitive. It's primitive because it's the image, because it's equal to the Y diagram, which is connected, okay? And also, now if you want to construct higher primitive diagrams, well, I've just constructed one, okay? Okay. Anyway, now let's make the relationship with Lie algebras formal. And since people not present here lose their voting rights, I have to ask the people present here how much they know about Lie algebras. So I think I know Peter and Karine. You have to tell me, do you know what a Lie algebra is? Should I give a quick review of what a Lie algebra is? Okay. So, you know what? Let me state the theorem first. Okay? And then make all the definitions necessary to prove it. Okay? So, theorem, well, it's a theorem with a definition inside it. Okay? So, theorem, given a metrized finite dimensional, you know what, let's have it two parts. Given a metrized finite dimensional Lie algebra, and let's call it calligraphic G, and a finite dimensional representation thereof, of it, let's call it R, okay? There exists a linear functional W sub G of R, sub G comma R, which is defined on A and which takes values in the ground field over which the Lie algebra is defined, hereby declared to be Q. You know, if you want it to be C, make it C, I don't care. Okay? It's irrelevant. So, obviously the theorem is imposed, right? I mean, I could just declare WG comma R to be zero. Okay, and the theorem will be, the statement will be satisfied. Okay? What I really mean is that there is an interesting construction like that, which is well-defined and which constructs many linear functionals on A. Therefore, many not invariants, because linear functionals on A are precisely not invariants. Okay? So, I mean, there is really a definition preceding this theorem. The definition is the definition of WG, R, and then the theorem is that it satisfies all the relations. Well defined, and it satisfies the STU and IHS and time asymmetry relations. Okay? And part two of the theorem will be equally well defined, ill defined, and it will say that given a metrized G, but not given R, so I don't care about R, you can construct. What should I call it? I think I'll call it a map T. T of G going from A, and here maybe I should be more precise, even though it doesn't matter, I'd rather call it A of the line skeleton, with values in the universal enveloping algebra of G. So this is the universal enveloping algebra of G. Okay? And part of the point is that these two maps are compatible with the structure that we already have. Well, compatible if you're careful about how you do it, with the structure that we already have on A, and with the structure that exists on universal enveloping algebra and representations. Okay, so the coproduct and the product have interpretations in this language as well. Okay, so in some sense, the combinatorial world gets transformed by these two maps defined there into the low algebra world of Lie algebras, or more precisely, finite dimensional metrized Lie algebras. Okay? So that's the real meaning of this theorem. But now let's set up all that is necessary to prove this theorem. So first of all, let's define the relevant notions. Okay? So, I guess I have to define a Lie algebra. So definition a Lie algebra is a vector space calligraphic G with a bilinear product, usually called the bracket, okay? And the bracket is, well, it's a bilinear operation, so we get two inputs in G, so it goes from G tensor itself into G, such that zero is that it's bilinear. I don't need to say that again. But one is that it's anti-symmetric. So anti-symmetric means that the bracket of X and Y is negative the bracket of y and x. If you flip the order of the inputs, you get the negative of what you started from. And two, it satisfies the Jacobi identity. So it satisfies the Jacobi identity, but I already wrote the Jacobi identity over here. And if I was with my laptop now, I would circle this, like click, and then drag it over here, and I would save some writing effort. Is it okay if I save the writing effort and just, you know what, let's just write it. It's the sum of x bracket with yz is equal to zero, and it's the sum over cyclic permutations. Okay? Now, there are lots of examples, but let me just give a few, okay? So, or you know what, let me give two or three or whatever. So, examples, okay, G is equal to Q, so just a single copy of Q, with the bracket equal to zero. I never said that the bracket has to be non-trivial, okay? Likewise, you could take Q to any power, or in fact just take any vector space with the bracket equal to zero, and the two conditions are satisfied. So this is the so-called abelian Lie algebra. Okay? Not terribly interesting. Okay? Two, here is the first interesting example. So G is equal to GLN. So GLN is simply the set of all, or you know what, let's write it in the same notation that I'm using in my other class. It's the n by n matrices with entries in the ground field. Okay? And the bracket of two matrices is defined to be their product, or the difference of the two ways of taking their product. Okay? So, it's a matter of just simple verification to check that it clearly satisfies anti-symmetry. The fact that it satisfies the Jacobi, I essentially already stated it, but it's just a matter of expanding this to a commutator and then expanding this to a commutator, so it becomes four terms. You do it three times, you get 12 terms, and they cancel in six pairs. Okay? Three, well, you can take G to be SON, okay? And SON, as a Lie algebra, is just, it should be capital N. SON, as a Lie algebra, is just the anti-symmetric matrices in GLN. Okay? So you can check that the bracket of two anti-symmetric matrices is again an anti-symmetric matrix, and therefore the bracket is well defined, and therefore since it satisfies the identities in GLN, it also satisfies them in the subspace. Okay, so let's check it. Suppose A and B are anti-symmetric. Let's compute the transpose of this. This is AB minus BA transpose. This is transpose, reverse the orders, and transposes, right? So you get B transpose, A transpose, minus A transpose, B transpose. But the transpose also, but A and B are anti-symmetric. So you get, so B transpose is minus B, A transpose is minus A, so you can just delete the transposes. And this is the negative of A bracket B. Okay? And there are many many other examples of similar nature. So I don't think I want to go through them, but let's go to example number four. Should I do example number four? Yes. So example number four, you can just start from two elements and construct anything you can construct out of them, modding out by these relations. Okay? So, in other words, it will be the set of all, so I'm right now defining the freely algebra on two generators, the generators being X and Y. And one way of saying it is to say that it's the set of all trees with leaves, with a root at the bottom, and leaves labeled X, Y, well, labeled with the letters X and Y, okay? Modulo, exactly the IHX relation and the anti-symmetry relation, with the bracket defined to be, well, the bracket of two such trees is to connect them together and to connect the roots with an extra vertex. So the bracket of one tree with another tree will be to take one, take the other, and connect them with an extra vertex. And then these relations exactly make this Lie algebra. I just impose anti-symmetry and Jacobi. Okay? And maybe I'll do one last example. So not really an example, but, I don't know, a little claim. So if you have two Lie algebras, so five, if G1 and G2 are Lie algebras, then the direct sum of G1 with G2 is a Lie algebra with the obvious structure. Okay? Sorry, the obvious structure being the bracket of something in G1 with something in G1 is us in G1. The bracket of something in G2 with something in G2 is us in G2. And the bracket of something in G1 with something of G2 is declared to be zero. Okay? Okay. So, well, done. A metric on a Lie algebra, a metric is a bilinear form defined on the Lie algebra squared, so meaning it goes from G tensor G into the ground field. Okay, which has the properties, first of all, it is symmetric, so basically a bilinear form. Two, to be a metric, it should be non-degenerate. Non-degenerate just means, for every x, you can find a y, so that x with y is non-zero. Okay, is it right? This is what non-degenerate means, I think so. Okay, so for every x, there exists a y such that the bracket of x, sorry, the metric of x and y is not equal to zero. A different way of saying it is to say that if you find a basis, so if xi is a basis of G, and you form the matrix xi, xj, and you call it tij, then this matrix is invertible. Okay? And the third condition that I want is invariance. So the bracket should be invariant under the action of the Lie algebra. And I think I'll just write it as a formula instead of coming where it comes from or instead of telling you where it comes from geometrically. So the formula is that if you take the bracket of the inner product of x and y and apply to it z, you get zero. But what it means to apply z to the bracket, it is to apply to x and to apply to y. So the precise meaning is that this bracket, it means this. The inner product of z with x and y plus the inner product of x with zy is equal to zero. So that's just, you know, take it as a formula with no meaning. Anyway, examples. So let's do examples parallel to the examples written over here. Okay? So if G is equal to Q to the N, you can take the metric to be anything. Anything symmetric and non-degenerate. Okay? The invariance condition is automatic because the brackets are always zero, so there is nothing to verify here. Okay? So this will be any norm or inner product on Q to the N. Okay? Two, so for GLN it's the interesting example. So let's define the bracket of, the inner product of matrices A and B to be the trace of their product. Okay? So first of all, it is symmetric, because the trace of AB is equal to the trace of BA. Okay? Second, it is non-degenerate. Right? If you have a matrix and it has a non-zero entry somewhere, you can always find a matrix to multiply it with so that everything else is killed except for this non-zero entry, which is moved to the diagonal. Maybe I should, you know what, let's do it even better. In general, you can verify that the trace of A times A transpose is equal to, what is it equal to? What?
Some square of the
matrix. Yeah, it's just the norm square of the matrix. It's the sum of all the Aij's squared. Okay? So this is, you just write everything explicitly and that's what you get. Okay? So therefore, for every A, if you take B to be A transpose, if A is non-zero, then the inner product of A with B is non-zero. Okay? Three, for SON, just take the induced metric from here. So take the same metric. For four, well, on the free Lie algebra there is no metric, no invariant metric. So having an invariant metric is a non-trivial condition. And five, so if you have the direct sum of two Lie algebras, take the direct sum inner product. So it just means that you take the inner product of G1 on G1, the inner product of G2 on G2, and if you take them in to take the inner product of two things from here and here, you just declare them to be orthogonal. And you can check that everything is verified. Oh, over here I forgot to verify this condition. Maybe it's worth doing. Okay, just to see how it works, okay? So over here, let's verify this condition. So what I need to check is that the trace of the bracket of C and A times B, right? C, A, and then the inner product of C, A, and B is the trace of their product. So I need to check that this trace plus, well, I need to compute. Plus the trace of A with the bracket of C and B, but that just becomes CAB minus ACB. This becomes ACB minus ABC, right? And I take the trace, so trace is linear, so I take the trace of this combination, this kills that, and I'm left with CAB minus ABC, and since, well, trace is cyclically invariant, or in other words, if you move C to the left, the trace doesn't change. So the trace of this and the trace of that are the same, so you get zero. Okay? Okay. So I told you what a metrized is, metrized Lie algebra. So a metrized Lie algebra is a Lie algebra with a choice of a metric. Finite dimensional means finite dimensional. The one exception in the examples that I gave is the free Lie algebra. It's not finite dimensional. All others are. And now I need to tell you what the finite dimensional representation is. So, definition, a representation of G is a Lie algebra homomorphism called, so the notation is a bit, let's call it, called R, going from G into either GLN for some n, or more invariantly, into the endomorphisms of some vector space, V of R. Okay? So, N by N matrices just means endomorphisms of a vector space, so linear transformations from the vector space to itself. By exactly the same definitions, the endomorphisms of a vector space are all for any vector space, not necessarily for Q to the N. So the endomorphisms of any vector space form a Lie algebra. And I want a Lie algebra homomorphism, meaning I want a linear map from G to the endomorphisms so that the bracket here is carried to the bracket here. So in other words, so that the bracket, so if you apply R to the bracket of two elements, the result is the bracket of their images. Okay? Now, just by conventions, or many times, the vector space of a representation is just the name of the representation. So many times there is a slight abuse of notation, and R stands both for the representation and the vector space on which it acts. Okay? So, I have nothing to say about it. This is just abuse of language. Right. So now the left-hand side is fully defined. Sorry, finite dimensional representation just means representation into a finite dimensional vector space. Okay? So... Well, a G-action just means that every element of G is an endomorphism of R, and the fact and to be an action means to satisfy this property. Oh, I guess I should give examples. So, the most trivial example is the identity representation of G on itself, of GLN on itself. Okay? You also have, GLN, or the defining representation, so-called, of SON. The defining representation is the map of SON into GLN. So it's a homomorphism of Lie algebras, and it maps SON into the endomorphism of some vector space. I suppose there are many other examples, but just to show you that there are there is a whole huge theory of representations of Lie algebras. But here is another example. So for GLN, so let G be GLN, or you know what? Let's go even more abstract. So if R1 and R2 are representations of G, then so is R1 direct sum R2. But also R1 tensor product R2. Okay? Where R1 tensor product R2 is a representation by the rule that X acting on lowercase R1 tensor lowercase R2 is equal to X acting on R1 tensor R2 plus R1 tensor X acting on R2. Okay? So in particular, say for GLN, we have an n-dimensional representation, the obvious one, into the endomorphisms of an n-dimensional vector space. But then you can take two copies of these representations and add them together, and you get a representation into a 2n-dimensional vector space. Or alternatively, you could tensor product this representation with itself, and you'll get a representation into an n-squared-dimensional space. Meaning that the matrices of that representation will be n-squared by n-squared. Okay? So I guess... that's it. Do I have time to really stay? No, I don't have time, so I'll stop now. But next time, we will actually prove this theorem.